Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Earwolf is the new home for the cult radio favorite Dr. Game Show.
In each episode, hosts Joe Firestone and Manolo Moreno play listener-created games with comedian guests and listener call-ins.
Guests include Chris Gethard, Sashir Zamata, Tom Sharpling, and Aparna Nanchurla.
Want to be on the show? Submit your game show ideas to drgameshow.com and follow Dr. Game Show on Facebook and Twitter to know when you can play along live.
Dr. Game Show was a James Bond villain.
He was probably my favorite of the Bond villains because all he wanted was exclusive broadcast rights for game shows in China for 100 years.
Check out new episodes of Dr. Game Show every Wednesday wherever you listen, like Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Earwolf.com.
Or the Carver Podcast Network. Not a real thing.
This is The Deal. My name's Matt Gourley.
And my name's Matt Myra, coming to you on a Sennheiser 845. And we are here to discuss a movie that never even happened.
That's what's the best part. We're going to discuss the third potential Timothy Dalton film that apparently there is a copious record of, including a meaty plot synopsis, the rumors, the pre-production notes, and all this stuff. So we're going to talk about the film that could have been but never was.
Some of the meatiest notes I've ever seen on a never was film.
So meaty that it was
the Terry Gilliam Don Quixote movie.
Oh, yeah. These are so meaty that it was hard to get through them all in time. So we're going to do our best to go through them beat by beat, but we're not going to do it alone. Because look at these just wonderful-looking gentlemen
listeners.
We have here today. First of all, joining us again, because he's just off and over here doing shit, Mark McConville.
Hello, everyone. I'm your resident non-James Bond non-expert.
We need a representative of the everyman.
I'm your everyman. I'm the guy who's not going to know much about the stuff.
Yeah, and at any time during this discussion, if you need to go, hold on, I don't understand, and I'm a normal person.
You listeners are going to need me on this one, I feel.
The audience surrogate.
We'll back up a little bit.
And that sonorous voice you hear right there is Chris Klimek.
Hi.
Chris, you're joining us all the way from Virginia, even though you're here tonight.
That's right.
In town for some visits,
family,
but also some
family business,
podcasting, and we're glad that you could stop by here tonight.
I'm honored to be here.
Well, we're honored to have you. And Mark, I guess you're here too.
Yeah. I live out back.
Chris, you actually reviewed the Becoming Bond documentary.
Yeah,
NPR,
yeah, I
right?
did. One of my many jobs is writing about movies for NPR, and wrote about that one. I wrote about Spectre when that came out. At the time Spectre was released, I did a big feature for The Atlantic about the history of the fictitious crime conspiracy Spectre and the whole... Eon Productions lawsuits and the Kevin McClory matter, which you all have discussed.
So
in great detail here. So
you did a history of the actual crime syndicate, the fake crime syndicate.
Yes,
that's beautiful.
A history of failed acronyms.
Yeah,
I'm gonna.
Why is it so hard to find something that starts with P but sounds sinister? Why do the S and the P have to share one word?
Yeah,
when you decode the
acronym. It's ridiculous.
Do you know what it stands for?
What?
Well, that's the problem.
What stands
as
for?
As much as we love
Spectre?
James Bond, we always struggle to get through
right,
this because it's so not memorable.
Special
executive.
Counterterrorism.
Revenge
and extortion.
Okay. You know what? I was thinking when we got into this that this was like, I was trying to do the acronym for SHIELD, where I don't think S.H.I.E.L.D. actually stands for anything in the Marvel Universe anymore, sure. But like the L and the D in S.H.I.E.L.D. originally was for Law Enforcement Division, suggesting that there were other divisions. Like there were other, like there was SHELF and Shellfish and like other acronyms that would do something else besides enforcing laws.
S.H.I.E.L.D. and Sheep.
So I'm not surprised they got rid of it.
Spectre should really have a small P.
Yeah,
it should. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're 100% right.
You know, I for years I've been trying to convince the mothers against drunk driving that there's only one D in MAD, and you can't tell those ladies anything.
So Fool's we're going to take a look at this thing tonight. We're actually going to dreamcast it from, I believe we're going to try to choose actors significant to that era.
We're going
to
use a Sega Dreamcast.
That's right. Which would have been accurate era
specific. The height of technology
kind of.
At that point.
Sort of. Maybe.
Basically.
When did the Dreamcast come out?
I'm going to go.
Like that was 2000.
Oh, it's in the 2000s.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, so I'm. This is more 99. Like late Master System? No, late Genesis.
I believe you'd have, you'd have a Genesis on your hands at this point.
Yeah. I was a Sega Master System guy. I did not go Nintendo. I went Sega. I don't know why, but I did. I think I liked the look Genesis of the man. Console better.
Oh, you went by the pure aesthetic of the physical object and not the gameplay or controls.
Yes,
I get it.
Of course I did.
I get it. We're sitting in living proof of that. This might not be the most comfortable room in the world, but it sure is the best looking.
I'm sorry. Can I fluff your pillows?
I'm quite
could
comfortable.
You, could you? Well, there's always part of me that, you know, weighing over 230, I was worried that I'm going to lean back and
you
just
can
shatter
lean back.
All
I'm
your
confident
windows.
that will hold you.
No, I don't want to do it. This is a thing we shan't test.
Okay. So let's start with this thing. All right. First of all,
well, hang on. I'd like to hear your thoughts on Becoming Bond briefly.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Well, I was a little disappointed that Mr. Gourley wasn't cast as young George Lazenby.
You were nice enough to say that
was
in the review.
You know, I mean, it's a shame you were unavailable.
He does. I mean, you would have been great, but the guy they had playing him was just looked so much better than Matt without his shirt.
He was very funny, and it would be a real tribute to him if I knew what his name is.
Matt, if you could put a shirt on tonight, it'd be great.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it. I think that guy was fantastic, and I appreciate you saying that. I don't think I could have done that.
I think he was a genuine Australian.
Yes,
right? He was.
Which is that's a real coup, because you don't find a lot of Australians who are movie actors.
And I can do an Australian accent, but it is...
It's Paul Hogan, and it's...
And no one... I mean, it's been a long time since Crocodile Dundee. You know, when is Australia going to start contributing
Yahoo
to
Yahoo Serious, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember Yahoo Serious?
There's a great movie trade deficit.
My Australian accent is so over the top that it would have never been believable.
Let's hear it. Ask me to pass you this glass of water.
Hilar, can you pass me that glass of water, please? I'm James Bond. Do you want a wallaby burger?
Oh, no.
Stick with it.
Yep.
You'll get there.
I'd like a martini shake and not style. Well,
you're adding a lot of H's.
Are you an Australian robot?
Hilar, I'm an Australian robot. You can totally trust me as a human sentient being. There is something else I want to mention, too, that this was sent to us. This idea was proposed to us by someone with the most British name.
Oh, let's hear it.
Bennett Hasty.
I'll take two.
And he actually, credit where credit is due, he sent this to us and said that this was mentioned on the Bond and Beyond podcast. So by all means, go listen to that as well. We send full credit to them and to Bennett for sending this in, this idea. So it's in no way an original idea.
I mean, deniability. This is the first I'm hearing that it was on another podcast.
Right, well, as the journalist in the room, I do feel like I have to ask if we know anything about the provenance of this document.
Oh, that's a good question.
You mean like how it was resourced and stuff?
Yes.
So, we found this on the MI.
Do we consider this credible?
Is this just a good-looking book report?
No, because I've I've been a frequent visitor. This is all on MI6-HQ.com, and they always, like, they never report anything until it is confirmed, all the rumors and everything like that.
That is a relief to me.
I feel... pretty good.
They have a good track record as far as your Bond news goes.
If anything, they're behind the ball because they wait for total confirmation until they report, I think.
Or like what we did, which was just willy-nilly shout-out news that then got picked up by some weird British tabloid.
Yeah, we're the, I mean, we're essentially the Fox News of the James Bond world.
Oh no.
I know. That's something we gotta aspire to,
sort that out.
I'm trying to remember the name of the Jonathan Pryce character from Tomorrow Never Dies. I always want to call him
Elliot
Raymond.
Carver.
Yeah,
come
okay,
on,
so
bro.
Not Raymond Carver, who is I always want what we talk about when we talk about Tomorrow Never Dies.
Exclusive broadcast rights in China for the next 100 years.
100 years.
That's why he's starting a war. Anyway.
All right. Should we get into this? We should also mention it's late at night. Okay.
It's later on the East Coast than on this.
That's
one.
Right. You must be tired.
How dare you?
Matt is always working, so he takes these little holes in his schedule to come out here, and it's a late night thing. And so,
I'm sorry that we have to do it, but we only have 2 more weeks of having to do it this late.
And then we'll get back
and
to Saturday.
Saturday mornings,
oh,
my friend.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's going to be real relaxing for some of us.
All right. The year is 1990. Bond 17 is just beginning pre-production, and Timothy Dalton is set to return for his third James Bond picture. Despite the lackluster performance of The 16th Adventure, which was last week's film we covered, License to Kill. Mark, do you remember that movie at all?
San Francisco? Does it happen in San Francisco?
Mark McConville representing the audience.
What are the...
Florida and the fictional city of Isthmus City.
Florida?
Yeah.
And the fictional city of Isthmus City.
Yeah.
In Florida, or is it somewhere else?
No, it's Central America, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's his other movie that he did for the
The
James
Living
Bonds?
Daylights.
Yeah, that one's in San Francisco.
No.
Nope. Nope.
Which one's on the Golden Gate Bridge? Where
View
the guys,
to a Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so mostly not... in the furthest southern point of Florida, Key West.
Key that's West.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, the southernmost point in the continental United States. I'm not
okay,
a total
so,
dumbo.
No, you're here for geography. Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
In May of 1990, a 17-page treatment by newcomer screenwriter Alphonse M. Ruggiero Jr. That's made up for sure and an alias for someone.
I thought that was the name of the guy who played Carlton on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's pretty close to that.
It's very close.
This has got to be an alias for like...
You think it's an anagram?
Oh, it could be. Or I'm thinking it's like Dalton himself. Or something.
I'm going to write.
Along with Bond veteran Michael G. Wilson, this script was drafted with a tentative shooting date set and arranged to begin in Hong Kong and with the aim of a late 1991 release. Now here's where it starts to get interesting.
Hmm.
Richard Maybaum, who was the frequent collaborator with Michael Wilson up to that point, and director John Glenn do not return to work on Bond 17, both leaving Eon on, quote, amicable terms in August 1990, despite trade press reports of a bloodless coup.
Bloodless coup
also,
sounds
this,
amicable.
Mm-hmm.
Although this reports an Eon spokesperson added insult to injury when stating that to Variety that writer Maybaum was a has-been.
He has been our writer previously. And then out of context.
Yeah. And will be our live writer of the future.
Sure. Yeah. You'd have to be pretty thin-skinned to take offense at that.
Up first for director replacements, Rambo First Blood director Ted Kotcheff.
Sold.
And John Landis.
Oh.
Sure. I mean, maybe Beverly Hills Cop 3 wouldn't have happened if he had gotten to make Dalton
Bond 3. Well, then we
wouldn't
have had the greatest director cameo of all time when a Mr. George Lucas is cut in line.
Unless George Lucas is in the third Timothy Dalton James Bond movie as the villain.
Oh, my God.
And Bond has to stop him from making the prequels.
What's Landis's qualifications for what is ostensibly an action film?
Good question.
Well, the Blues Brothers has a lot of car chases in it.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. They love a car chase in a Bond movie.
The thriller video
is action-packed.
Yeah. I guess he worked on a script treatment for A Spy Who Loved Me in the development.
Wow.
That's what it says here.
Yeah.
But, you know what?
Twilight Zone. You know that part where he killed those people?
Oh,
yeah. Let's get him on board a James Bond movie.
Maybe it was an assassination plot. Guess who the screenwriters were initially?
Well, didn't you just say Alfonso Ribeiro?
No, he was the director. Oh, no, you're right. He was first, but then, sorry.
Well, just they brought in somebody else. They replaced this newcomer.
Yeah, already replaced. It goes through many permutations.
I'm going to guess it's a woman.
It's partially a woman.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah. It's a
it's
duo.
It's J.J. Davis.
Oh, it's a
from,
duo.
From
yeah.
The Crying Game.
What screenwriting duo do you know that's a man and a woman?
Nichols and May.
responsible for the second part of a popular franchise.
I think this is going to be a short round.
Yes, that's right.
Deliberation.
The screenwriters for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Wachowski brother and sister?
No.
Okay.
Willard Hook and Gloria Katz. Shooting was start in 1999. And then...
Have they both transitioned?
The Wachowskis, yes.
Yeah. Oh my God, good for them. I mean, if they're happy, go for it. Weird side.
Yeah.
No, and I just wasn't up to date on the Wachowskis.
I didn't know that.
Whereas Willard Hook and Gloria Katz just traded genders.
Sure.
It's they gender need to just spice up the relationship.
So litigation delays happened.
Delays with McClory, right?
MGM Creative Affairs VP Elizabeth Robinson announced in Variety that work on the 17th 007 movie had resumed after they put it on hold for around 3 years during the litigation. Wait, hold on.
Oh, this is when Cubby Broccoli was suing them because they were selling off MGM and they were not going to give a fair distribution right price to the Bond franchise.
Okay.
That's exactly what this was. And I've decided.
So Dalton's contract expires in 93, and at this point it gets to be around 94, and he's not coming back.
He decides to do what his hairline is doing.
Hold on.
Why are you getting on his hairline?
Step back.
Yes.
So his contract runs out, and they just say, we're not going to re-up it?
No, he walks away.
He did.
Yeah, according to this, when Dalton's contract officially expired in 1993, which was originally planned to be the year of his fourth film, the actor bowed out from the role gracefully in 1994. Dalton had read France's screenplay for Bond 17 whilst filming Scarlet. Mm-hmm. It was there that Dalton made and subsequently announced his decision to walk away. This saved Broccoli, who was reportedly under pressure from MGM, from having to fire the actor.
So I wonder how much of that is him knowing that that's swirling.
Maybe.
And him deciding.
And get this. When Schwarzenegger's 007-style film True Lies hit screens, it undid any plans to fast-track Bond 17 production. Many of the action sequences in France's script were too similar, so most of the screenplay had to go back to square one. I keep mentioning France, but I skipped that part.
True Lies?
Michael France.
True Lies has a ton of Florida stuff in it, more than Living Daylight.
Yeah.
Or, I mean,
License Wait, this is... True Lies resembled the unmade film.
Yeah.
Well, what they're saying is obviously they were going to do an action set piece with a Harrier jet. They were going to knock some dogs together in the head and then show them getting up.
Yeah. Yes. They were going to use racial stereotypes as terrorists.
They were going to have a horse chasing a motorcycle through Washington, D.C. into the Westin Bonaventure Hotel, which
Jamie
is not
Curtis
in Washington, D.C.
Jamie was going to do a softcore striptease.
Tom Arnold's going to wisecrack.
He's probably, it's the greatest performance of any human being on any film.
Check out I Was There Too for Tom Arnold's take on True Lies.
Did you do that too?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Oh, I listened to
I
that
I should
one.
Listen to your
Where
podcast.
You it's really good.
You don't care.
But my problem is that everything's behind Stitcher Premium. Use the promo code BOND30.
Yeah, please.
Mm-hmm. Nice plug.
The rumors about Bond 17, are you ready for these guys?
Let's hear a rumor.
I'm not sure if I am.
They involve Anthony Hopkins. And Whoopi Goldberg.
Dreamcast!
Yes.
That's the name of the movie. The only known piece of Bond 17 promotional material was on show when the Carlton Hotel was transformed with a hoarding announcement. Hoarding announcing Dalton's third film during the 1990 Cannes Film Festival. The banner read, Timothy Dalton returns as 007 in the 17th James Bond film, coming summer 91, with a smaller caption under Dalton's pose stating, the most successful series in motion picture continues. To view a photo taken by Kay Collette of the Carlton Hotel Bond 17 frontage, visit this link. This page cannot be found.
This sounds insufficiently grand for Bond.
This is ridiculous.
Oh, man. Anthony Hopkins was rumored to be interested in playing an, quote, intelligent villain. Hopkins and Dalton were friends and debuted in the same film together, Lion and Winter. That's the first play I was ever in. Hopkins would also be rumored as villain for subsequent James Bond films, including Tomorrow Never Dies. Oh, which the actor turned down due to the state of script rewrites.
Well.
I get it. I get it.
You made a huge mistake, Mr. Hopkins. Sir Anthony Hopkins.
It's okay. He got to do Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. He's great in that.
Yeah, I agree. Whoopi Goldberg was repeatedly reported as being interested in playing a villainess. The American actress was dating Dalton at the time. I did not remember that. Hmm. Did you guys know that? I thought she was all about Ted Danson.
No trouble.
She only dates men with TD names.
Timothy Dalton.
Ted Danson. And Tom
Dobson. It's just a guy
who could forget Tom Dobson.
Tyne Daly.
He worked at the gas station. Tyne Daly. Yeah.
And Travis Dickel.
Travis Dickel, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
From Taxi Driver.
Taxi Driver.
All right. And then GoldenEye comes along.
Bum, bum, bum.
Wait, yeah. Check this out. Walt Disney's Imagineering
Division
was
called Along Comes GoldenEye.
Walt Disney's Imagineering Division was contracted to supply designs for the high-tech robots that featured in the early screenplays. Form was to follow function according to the treatment, so they would not have necessarily been robots in humanoid form. See, we're going to get to the plot synopsis, but okay. I'm curious to hear what that's all about.
And maybe Disney will end up owning the Bond franchise in a
probably
you know, next I gotta tell few you, months. That worries me, but also tantalizes me.
Sure. Paves the way for your Marvel Star Wars Bond crossover.
Which is something no one's wanted. But
no. Yes. Vancouver was to play a major location in the film as
Who's
well.
Who's he?
You know my buddy Vancouver?
Australia
Van
was
Wilder's
also touted.
Friend Vancouver. Yeah, right.
Australia and Vancouver. Though Bond has never been to Australia or Canada.
Oh, I cannot wait for the next one.
Yeah, everyone wants to see a Bond film where he goes to Montreal.
I know, but I feel like they're trying to check off the boxes of the places he hasn't been there. Okay. Do you want to hear the synopsis of this film?
I can't wait.
God damn it. This episode. I apologize, Chris. You had to come here on this evening with the three of us in the shape we're in. All right. MI6 receives a letter threatening the destruction of a secret government lab in Scotland. Matt, you're not even paying attention.
I'm actually trying to find the link so I can read along with you, which I have just opened.
Okay. MI6 receives a letter threatening the destruction of a secret government lab in Scotland. A week later, with no further contract or ransom demands, the lab is mysteriously destroyed. James Bond is dispatched by MI6 under the guidance of Nigel Yupland. I can't wait to cast Nigel Yupland.
He's the Minister of Defense, Nigel Yupland. Yeah.
To assess the threat, following his only lead, Bond tracks down master thief Connie Webb and discovers her sinister dealings with Cajone Industries.
Cajone Industries?
Yeah. I'm glad that's there, though, because I sure don't get the innuendo with Connie Webb.
Spell it.
Which one?
Cajone.
Cajoni.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How do you spell Cajones?
K. Jones. C-A-J-A. Yeah.
They're going for, like, the double entendre in the corporate bad name, but not the girl. Connie Webb.
I like that. I think that's interesting. You know, they seem to, through the whole Dalton era, they seem to be sort of... at a cross purposes, whether they were, because in The Living Daylights, as you pointed out, he is suddenly sort of monogamous.
Right.
And then, you know, he's back to being a little bit condescending in License to Kill.
Yeah.
But I think that would be, I would welcome that if we you know, export the innuendo to something else, to like a villain name, to a fake corporation name.
The girls have carried that burden far too long.
I agree.
Bond journeys to Japan to offer Connie the chance to broker a deal and sell a high-tech computer chip to her contacts. Escaping from certain death at the hands of twin assassins, the Cajone brothers.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it.
Okay.
Bond pursues Connie to Hong Kong. Sorry. They really put these double entendres everywhere. To Hong Kong to meet with her buyers.
Yeah, Hong Kong is a hilarious place name. That suggests all kinds of... dirty stuff.
Aided by veteran agent Denholm Crisp and Q, Bond...
Denholm Crisp.
That's like taking Quentin Crisp and Denholm Elliot. That's pretty lazy, I think. Bond must learn the true nature of Sir Henry Lee Ching's scheme, escape a Yakuza assassin, and deal with the Chinese Secret Service. After witnessing the aftermath of a nuclear meltdown in China caused by Sir Henry, Bond must stop him at all costs before he launches many more attacks, causing global pandemonium and sparking World War III. So that synopsis doesn't make any sense to me. Does it? Do you guys?
I was with it the whole time.
That was more detailed than any synopsis should ever be.
And it's going to get a lot more detailed because that's the mini synopsis. They have this broken down by acts.
So here's what I'm trying to gather. The mission is clearer, right? The mission briefing they give you, which is after terrorists target a Scottish nuclear facility, 007 is deployed to the Far East to investigate prolific businessman Sir Henry Lee Ching. In Hong Kong, James Bond rendezvous with retiring spy Denham Crisp, crosses paths with the Chinese Secret Service, and teams up with jewel smuggler Connie Webb to get to the bottom of Ching's shady past and prevent global pandemonium that could spark World War III.
Where are you getting that one?
It's on the page you sent me, bro. Mm.
Oh, yeah, bro. Yeah.
Come on, bro.
Hey, bro.
Bro. Don't bro me.
Bro. Bro.
Don't bro me.
Bro.
Okay.
Broseph?
I'll take that.
Broham Broken?
So what do you guys think of that plot?
Well, I mean, it's your typical James Bond plot in which you're trying to prevent World War III.
Right,
yeah. There's a nuclear facility involved, which is something we get from Bonds here and there, but mostly it's missiles and not just, you know.
Still fetishizing microchips from only 6 years after
the robotics of it. I think if they're anywhere close to FX2,
I'm sure that's what they're shooting for.
Yeah. I mean, then that's going to be very cool.
Right.
Well,
it was kind of a race to see who could appropriate stuff from FX2 the fastest through most of 91, 92.
I mean, when that clown fights, it's just...
When James Cameron saw that movie, he was like, holy shit.
Is Brian Dennehy in that one as well?
He sure is.
I think that's why they put Joe Don Baker in these Bond films, is like a poor man's Brian Dennehy.
So are we going to start staffing up this thing? Because I don't know. I don't know that we could do the detailed synopsis.
Before we do that, I checked all the way out during that synopsis.
Yeah, it was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let me.
I think the movie should start with a Phantom Menace style title crawl with just that text as you just
and then
just
we
read
jump
it.
In.
Okay. Yeah, let me give you the cold
Bond
open.
Is mitigating a trade dispute.
All right, hold on. Where is that?
There's a cold open.
Yeah, there's a synopsis of the cold open.
Is it as long as the?
Yeah, this is going to be longer than the one in.
I mean, the act breakdown.
Brosnan
is,
3.
Yes. The act breakdown is
it's not very long.
Ridiculously detailed.
Led by the Minister of Defense, Nigel Yupland, a bomb squad searches a chemical weapons factory. All appears to be normal. However, in a lab where computer-driven devices perform tasks too risky for humans, one of the machines goes haywire and soon bursts into flames. Outside, the bomb squad duck for cover as the factory
So it's a factory. They go to a factory where there are machines performing tasks.
There's got to be something missing here.
Something besides the factory fire? Well, so here's what I've gathered from everything you've read so far. This guy that is, what is his name? The Minister of Defense.
Nigel Yupland. Yeah, let me give you
He's experimenting with robots that can go into places that humans can't and do dangerous tasks, okay? So one of these robots is sabotaged when they're going into this chemical plant to defuse a bomb that they normally wouldn't send human beings into.
And now Johnny Five is alive.
Right. Yeah. Now when this sabotaged robot starts to go haywire, bursts into flames, it actually sets off the explosion that they were trying to prevent in the first place.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. All right, let me describe Nigel Yupland's character.
Okay, this I am way on board with.
Do it.
A career-focused man, Yupland has quickly ascended in rank to Minister of Defense at MI5. Mm. He has the confidence of the British Prime Minister and no love for the 00 section and would like to see nothing more than it shut down.
So this hence, and Andrew, and what's his name, Inspector?
Yeah, Denby character.
But instead of surveillance, his move is robots.
Right. Sir who now?
So who would play Nigel Yupland?
Bill Nighy. Mm.
James Fox.
Well, you're looking at
Bill Nighy would be good.
He'd be good, but I don't think Bill Nighy could ascend the ranks that You know what I mean? Bill Nighy, even in 1991, is a man of a reasonable age to be the Minister of Defense, right? So you need a young, kind of a younger person.
Oh, a younger hotshot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. With a name like Nigel Yupland, that implies to me a
Minister
man
Yupland.
Of years.
Right.
Yeah.
But well, the rest
okay,
of it
so, so is Nigel Yupland older or is Denholm Crisp older? Because it also
says Denholm
Crisp
is retiring, near retirement.
Right?
Well, okay. Here, that I got an answer for that. Denholm Crisp, a veteran agent who is verging on retirement, resides in Japan and is old friends with Q.
Well, you know who Denholm Crisp should be? Albert Finney.
Well, he was too young back then.
Yeah.
That was like Miller's Crossing era.
How old do you think agents have to be? I think they could take an early retirement plan, right? Do you want an older guy like a Sean Connery?
Well, if he's friends with Q, I mean, Q's in...
Sean Connery would be good.
Hmm. I think you get... honestly, I think you get Denholm Elliott to play Denholm Crisp. Okay. Imagine him and Desmond Llewellyn. He's Marcus Brody from... Indiana sure. Jones. Yeah. You remember that guy?
Got lost.
I've seen a James Bond movie, Matt.
Well, he's not in James Bond.
Have you seen James Bond in the Crystal Skull?
Desmond Llewellyn.
Yes. But I'm saying Denholm Elliott should play Denholm Crisp, and he's the guy from Indiana Jones.
Too many D's.
This episode is fucked.
Well, I think I got you. I do know what you mean.
Imagine the comedic duo of those two. I would see them. No, I'm alone.
I love him, and I would say yes to that. Desmond Llewellyn and what's his name, Brody?
Denholm Crisp.
In Indiana Jones?
Marcus Brody?
Marcus Brody. Yeah. I would watch that all day.
Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
I like Richard E. Grant.
I love Richard E. Grant.
I think he might be
a
little too...
What about him for Nigel Yupland?
Yeah, okay.
This is Hudson Hawk era.
It is. It sure is. And I think you could just cast all of Dalton Bond 3 with the Hudson Hawk cast.
You're right.
It'd be fine with me.
Put James Coburn in there?
Hell yeah, James Coburn.
You're
Danny Aiello is...
Felix Leiter.
Is Felix, yes.
Richard E. Grant as Nigel Yupland, I don't think you could do better than that. I wouldn't have thought about that. That's good.
With Nail and him.
Yeah. Okay. Connie Webb. A retired Olympic skier, and well, that's a new detail. In her early 30s, she is the daughter of a world-famous thief. This American adventuress also takes after her father's line of work and is occasionally used by the CIA to steal unobtainable items.
Whoopi Goldberg.
She's the daughter of world-famous cat burglar Hudson Hawk.
Yeah. Who plays this role? Early 30s... In 1990, 91.
Emma Thompson.
Is this your prototypical Bond girl?
Mm.
Uma Thurman is like 20.
This is the Bond girl of this movie.
Yes. She's American. But yeah, I think Uma Thurman's too young at this point.
What year is this coming out?
91. Well, with the legal stuff, though, maybe 94.
Which is Pulp Fiction, Uma Thurman. Right?
Is she 30 in that?
That's her second act already.
I'm just saying.
Hmm.
Well, is the maybe the better question, who never got to be a Bond girl?
That should have.
Is this the slot where you fill that?
Yeah.
Just looking at the question from a different angle, man.
I like the idea of it being an actual American.
I like where your head's at. Is it...
Who looks like a skier?
Jennifer Grey.
I'm looking for a name.
1990. So what were the big films in 90 and 91?
All right. Well, 91 was the year of Terminator 2.
Okay.
So this is like my sort of coming out as a movie nerd. 91 is the first summer when I know the release date of everything.
Yeah.
I'm counting the days.
I think mine is 89.
Okay, well, 89 was a big one. 89 was if I can
89 was
go
a great
on a tangent
year.
Here.
Please.
I was in line to, the first movie that I ever like went the day of release to buy tickets for the night show, because I was afraid it was going to sell out, was the Burton Batman.
Oh, 89. Yeah.
So my friends and I are standing in line the morning of the Friday, June 23rd, I think, and there's this stunt, where a couple of guys drive up in a Jeep, like one of those open-top military Jeeps with a big star on the hood, and one of them leaps out and starts shouting, and then a helicopter lands. This really happened. This is in a mall parking lot, and it's one of those like Korean War era bubble top open side helicopters like you see in the opening credits of MASH.
Yeah.
And they are firing presumably blanks
what?
At this helicopter as it lands. And then a guy, some like generic looking dude in a tuxedo, jumps out of the helicopter, you know, fake shoots the two guys who are in the Jeep, and then announces that License to Kill is coming to this theater July whatever. And we were all there in our Batman t-shirts with our mouths hanging open.
What?
I swear this really happened. I don't think I hallucinated this.
This, I've never heard of anything like this. What theater was this?
This was at the Fair Oaks Mall in Fairfax, Virginia, right off of Route 50. It hasn't been a movie theater in a long time.
What kind of guerrilla marketing was this? Was it the theater that put this together?
Did
the
theater just know? I don't know. What does it cost to rent a helicopter?
Was there cameras there to film it?
I don't remember any cameras.
Wow. Have you ever looked for this on YouTube? Have you searched for it on the internet?
I haven't.
License to Kill promotional stunt.
Boy,
1989.
You know, I'm casting all kinds of aspersions on the provenance of this leaked plot synopsis, and meanwhile, I'm giving you a recollection. This might be a Blade Runner memory implant.
But I love that License to Kill had the balls to kind of go.
Well,
like,
that was
Batman, we're going to steal your thunder here a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, that was the summer Lethal Weapon 2.
Lethal Weapon 2, Last Crusade.
Yeah, and so many, there were too many, like I never saw License to Kill in the theater. Living Daylights was the first one I saw in the theater, but I didn't get around to License to Kill. I didn't get around to Star Trek 5. I didn't. There was just too much.
Huge summer.
Yeah.
Huge. Do you remember that summer, Mark?
I wasn't born yet. Lethal Weapon brings up someone for the Connie Webb.
Oh, is it Patsy Kensit?
Rene Russo. Oh.
She doesn't show up till Lethal Weapon 3, but that doesn't matter.
But I was just seeing still, the franchise.
Sure. I really like her.
Rene Russo.
I enjoy her opposite James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, in the Thomas Crown Affair Redux.
Mm.
The best James Bond movie Pierce Brosnan ever did.
89, though, was huge. It was the biggest year of movies ever, if you ask me. You got yourself your Look Who's Talkings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was 89. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Back to the Future 2. Last Crusade, the greatest Indiana Jones movie that Matt doesn't agree with me about.
I like it.
Dead Poets Society.
Was 89?
Excellent Adventure.
I don't believe so.
Field of Dreams.
When's Die Hard?
Die Hard's 88.
Your Christmas Vacations.
Oh, that's right. Is this also...
Karate Kid? Lean on Me?
No. Karate Kid was 84. This must be Karate Kid 3. Okay.
Sorry, it was a very...
Still, so just great. As good a
okay.
film.
So small.
Okay, that's true. That is a small font.
That's the one with Sato, right?
The font in all the Karate Kid movies is really tiny, hard to read. No wonder they were kicking each other.
What other prospects do we have for Connie Webb here?
Well, you could go the Michelle Pfeiffer route.
I thought about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, is that just us stealing?
Fabulous Baker Bond girl.
But you're also I'm stealing from Catwoman, Selena Kyle. Is that's a true. Cat burglar.
I think Batman. Patsy Kensit was a good accidental suggestion from Lethal Weapon 2.
I love her. What happened to her?
Wasn't she married to one of the guys in Oasis?
Yeah, Liam. I was going to say Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson from Oasis?
Yeah. Liam Gallagher.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Noel Neeson doesn't get cast in those ass-kicking geriatric revenge flicks.
Okay, let's each pick one person to be Connie. What's her name? Connie?
Connie Webb.
And then we will vote.
I just need a second, though.
I have my answer right now. And it is a, I think, decently aged, at that point, Kim Cattrall. Kim Cattrall.
Sure. This is before Star Trek VI. I'm not aware of her in 1989, but that's good.
Yeah, I think they tend to go that way with your Bond girls. So I'm saying Kim Cattrall.
It's an excellent choice.
Ooh.
Mark, you got one?
I mean, I liked Rene Russo.
That's your pick.
It's hard for me to steer away from it.
Take it. That's your pick.
Okay, so she's in Major League that year, I think?
She is in Major League that year, yes.
All right.
She's I'm totally thinking of Bull Durham. Yes, she's in Major League.
Susan Sarandon.
Tom Bergeron's Bergeron.
Tom Bergeron.
The host of Hollywood Squares.
America. Yeah. America. This is you. Matlock?
I'm going to go... I'm gonna throw a little left field choice in here.
Okay.
Lauren Holly.
From Ghostbusters?
No.
No, from like Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Oh.
But is she too young at that point? She's probably...
I mean, Dumb and Dumber is 96.
Yeah, and...
She might be...
I can tell you exactly how old she is.
Now, I'm not saying that she'd be my top choice, but I'm saying that I think she would be someone... Because, you know, for Bond girls, they tend to pick girls on their career ascension, necessarily. Like, they don't always pick the A-list starlets. They always kind of get someone on the way up, and I think at that point, she probably was. She had done The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, the star-making vehicle.
At that point, she's in her late 20s. I think she's right in the zone.
Okay. So I think that's someone that they might have picked, like Carrie Lowell in License to Kill was not a household name.
Lauren Holly is your pick.
Okay. Chris?
I wonder if Emma Thompson would die in to appear in a Bond film. And you never know. You never know until you ask.
So in a Brit for an American, she could certainly do it.
Yeah,
she did it in Dead Again right around this time.
Yeah, I think 91. Dead Again is 91. Yeah. I think that's right. So,
Okay.
Okay, let's take a vote here.
All right.
Let's argue pros and cons. I'm just going to go ahead and eliminate Emma Thompson.
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
That hurts.
I had to do it because I just don't want to take jobs away from hardworking Americans.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, look, if I'm going to vote for anybody for my choice, I'm going to choose her. But I don't know that they would have.
Really?
She's a brilliant actress.
Yeah. Oh, she's one of the best actresses on the planet.
No, but I can't imagine.
I think that's beneath her.
Cubby signing off on that.
Yeah. Okay, Matt?
I mean, I personally enjoy my own vote of Kim Cattrall, but if I cannot select my own, if I can't take my own, I'm going to take Rene Russo.
I think Kim Cattrall is doesn't have the cachet that...
Wait, okay, so she had been in Big Trouble in Little China by this point, right? That's 86.
Right, but she's also got Mannequin.
What is the cachet?
Oh, no, am I thinking of Teresa?
Wait, I need to understand your cachet requirement for this role. Because in my mind, all of these Bond women are people that are very nearly discovered by the Bond franchise.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think she's done too much stuff already.
Done
too much that has not progressed past a certain point for me. Does that make sense?
I'm trying to change her career right now.
Oh, well, you
need to
start
be in this movie that doesn't exist.
See, I see her more as a like Priscilla Barnes in License to Kill. She'll play a supporting role or something.
Okay.
But I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying.
We have not landed on the right person. Because the thing that keeps sticking in my mind is that this character is an award-winning skier.
Right.
Correct?
But keep in mind that they cast Denise Richards as a nuclear physicist.
Yeah. Matt, you've got me there. Christmas only comes once a year or something like that.
No, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking up biggest actresses in 1991.
Oh man. Okay. Well, I think the biggest hit
Gina
in 90
Davis?
was Ghost, right? So Demi Moore was probably the top of the list at that point.
Demi Moore, but then again, that's too much cachet.
Right.
He's
right.
looking for the top actresses, thusly eliminating his own criteria.
Right. Well, so let's look at who
you look at. You got to look at the top actresses
of 1993
or three.
Good thinking.
What year?
90.
You know what? We're gonna get to Sandra Bullock eventually because she blows up with Speed in 94.
I'm choosing 93.
So 91 is when we want to catch Sandra Bullock.
93, your best actress in a leading role are Emma Thompson, Michelle Pfeiffer, Susan Sarandon, Mary McDonnell, and Catherine Deneuve.
Well, Mary McDonnell it is.
Supporting role, Marissa Tomei, Judy Davis, Joan Plowright, Vanessa Redgrave, Miranda Richardson.
I'm going to give it to Uma Thurman. Honestly.
You're really not that far off.
She would have been 21 years old, 22 years old.
Right.
I buy it. A former Olympic skier.
Boy, she sure was a convincing swordswoman in those Kill Bill movies. So I think she could.
She can do anything.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to throw out Jessica Tandy.
All right, we have a new winner. It's Jessica Tandy.
Okay, Jessica Tandy.
Now I'm going to cast Uma Thurman in this, and if anyone disagrees, Meet me on Instagram.
once Instagram is invented.
Amanda Lund's hilarious podcast miniseries is back for another season on Stitcher Premium.
Who's Amanda Lund?
Well, she is the greatest wife I've ever known that isn't my own wife.
Whose wife is she?
Your wife.
Well, this time Maribel May wants to plan your wedding.
Through the 6 episodes of The Complete Wedding, Maribel takes you through everything you need to know to have a successful wedding, from meeting a man to the wedding night.
Guests popping up this season include Maria Blasucci, Mark McConville, Mee Gourley, Paul F. Tompkins, and so many more.
Let Maribel May plan the best day of your life. Binge The Complete Wedding on Stitcher Premium.
Go to StitcherPremium.com/complete and use code BOND for free month of Stitcher Premium. Now look, I'm going to get real with you. Yes, I'm biased. Yes, I worked on this. But I'm taking all of that off the table to tell you this thing is one hilarious podcast. It's 6 episodes, part of a 3-episode series, 4 if you count the spinoff, Complete Man, by me.
Seems like it's 6 episodes, Matt. You could just sign up for this free month using the promo code BOND and get it all in that month.
You could binge these in a day
and then
move right on to any other premium content you want.
Like all Super Ego. But anyway, this is really about Amanda's podcast.
You're right. How did I turn it about me? Matt and Matt. Let's hear some more of these character descriptions. Twin Cahoney brothers. Both brothers are large, well-built men in charge of a vast Japanese industrial empire and have no intention to sell their company. The twins have connections to the Japanese underworld and Yakuza.
Connections to the Japanese underworld in charge of a large Japanese corporation. Do they need to be Japanese?
They are Japanese.
Okay.
Are they?
Well, their name's Cahoney.
K-O-H-I-O-N-I. O-N-I. Cahoney.
I expect I know the answer to this, given the great cultural sensitivity that Eon Productions has always shown when casting Asian characters in these films. I got somebody.
Go.
I believe he is Chinese, not Japanese.
Okay.
1991 was also the year of the Hong Kong set adventure Double Impact, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme and Jean-Claude Van Damme for precisely... twice the Van Damage.
Yep.
The villain was played by the great Bolo Young, who is a big, intimidating martial artist. If you imagine that odd job could do a 360 spin kick. I like Bolo Young for the Cahoney brothers. Instead of having two Van Dams playing separate characters on screen, we take one of the few trends that the Bond films have never appropriated before.
Right.
One actor playing dual roles, and you get your Bolo Young as the Cahoney brothers.
And you really would have expected that in the late 90s after the success of The Nutty Professor.
I'm not sure how it didn't happen.
Yeah, that
sounds
good.
May I offer my suggestion?
Please. You may.
Michael and Martin McNamara.
Are they those, like, fancy, shitty movie twins?
They're Canada's kickboxing movie twins. They made 2 martial arts movies in the late 80s and in 1990. And boy, does this look like a pile of garbage. But come on, they made a movie called Dragon Hunt in 1990. They would have been a hot property.
What are their names?
Michael and Martin McNamara. The twin dragons. They're twins. They're born in Belfast, Ireland, and they were raised in Canada. Nothing says Japanese Yakuza business more than these dudes.
You know, you just get
they're
the
only
same
5'5".
Wait a minute.
They're both 5'5".
This is not what I expected. They look like... who do they look like? I can't even... David Brenner.
Dan and Don Stanton.
Who's that?
Look them up.
Okay. Now they're in T2, right?
Yes.
Aren't they like the asylum guard who T1000 kills with the murderous eye poke?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
How about them Guinness Book of World Records big huge motorcycle?
What if they use the bikes as weapons?
What about Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen?
Why they were larval in 1991.
That's right.
Well, it sounds like you're correct, Chris. I think we have to go.
Bolo Young.
Bolo Young is great.
Thank you.
And are we good with Richard Grant as Nigel Yupland? That seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, move on from that. That's great.
I am fully placated for losing Emma Thompson.
Okay, and Denholm Crisp, are we good with Denholm Elliott playing that role?
Yes.
I mean, it just seems written for him,
right? Okay, yeah. He's pretty much the best Denholm.
All right, next on the list is Otto Winkhart, Swiss lawyer who acts as Connie's middleman for fencing highly priced commodities.
Swiss lawyer. No physical description is given other than he's a Swiss lawyer.
Yeah.
Right.
Rutger Hauer.
I got a great
one. Oh, that's pretty good.
I just got to make sure.
That he's Swiss?
Please right. talk.
Well, okay. If we get Daniel Day-Lewis, he's going to insist on actually going to law school in Switzerland and then taking the bar in Geneva. And we just don't have that kind of time. So,
what? How big of a part is this?
It doesn't sound major.
Here's my idea.
Yeah?
Lyle Lovett.
I love it.
Wow.
I mean, that was sort of when he was...
He would this movie would have taken the entire duration of his marriage to Julia Roberts.
This is the era of giving that man things he shouldn't have had.
That's why I'm picking him. Yeah. I love it. I just think it's this strange...
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this part doesn't sound like a major... Maybe there's a plot point that runs through this character, but mostly... I just think Lyle Lovett is just a guy who can show up in a movie
it
for
also
a couple minutes.
It also fits with the trend of putting musicians into weird James Bond henchman roles with Putter Smith from Diamonds Are Forever. Right. And Goldie, wasn't he a DJ or something?
So has Chris Isaac already passed? Is that why we're calling Lyle Lovett?
Was Goldie a musician from The World Is Not Enough?
He's a London hip-hop guy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Renee Zellweger? Would have been a good pick.
Would have been girl, anyway. Junior high, probably.
No, she's
no,
a
I
year
was
older
high,
than
so
Uma Thurman.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Hmm. I'm wrong.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry to digress.
Well, I like Lyle Lovett. I think that's great.
I'm done. Lyle Lovett it is.
Okay. Who
that hair,
Lyle
it's so unique.
Yeah.
Sir Henry Lee Ching. In his mid-30s, this half-Chinese British computer genius entrepreneur has built his own large high-tech computer chip empire, supplying the world with industrial grade chips which are used in everything from factory robots through to missiles. Currently based in Hong Kong, his motivations are a mystery. By the way, if my reading seems stilted, it's because I'm making corrections on typos as I go.
So this sounds like a fella who's got these microchips and everything and everywhere, and then the minute he can just flip a switch and now chaos can ensue.
That's half Chinese, half British. That's
Pat Morita, done.
Not even close.
Yeah.
What do you mean not even close?
You know, I think getting a guy who's only really one of those would be sort of offensive. But if you go with someone who's fully neither.
Right.
You know, frankly, sticking with the Hudson Hawk cast, I like Frank Stallone for this. I think he really wants it. I think he would.
That's crazy.
I think he would come up.
I don't. I like where your head's at, but it's crazy.
Who looks only mildly Asian in this time period?
Keanu Reeves.
Well, Tia Carrera.
Oh,
Sir Henry Lee Ching.
There's
a good Bond girl. Yeah. American Tia Carrera.
But you know, she was in True Lies. So they were thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say this, and I don't mean it.
I love what you
but I do.
Johnny Depp.
Seagal.
Oh.
I was wondering when we were gonna get to him.
Yeah. But is he in any way Asian, or he just dresses Asian?
No, he is he has this whole made up biography about having.
But he's probably from
from the
Baton
Japanese
Rouge
or something. I think he's from Michigan. I think he grew up in Michigan.
Sure.
You know, claims to have studied in Japan. I think that's legit. I think that's been verified. But
he's above the law.
That's what we know about him. You know, he's very hard to kill.
This is also a time when whitewashing was in no way a cultural problem.
It was encouraged.
So feel free to cast the whitest person in this role.
By the way,
Jonathan Price is in Miss Saigon in this era as the Vietnamese.
Is this your villain?
No.
It's not?
Is he?
I'm not sure. It sounds like the Cajone brothers are the villain.
Aren't the Cajone brothers the heavies? Aren't the Cajone brothers? They're the henchmen, right?
They're the heavies.
Must be the villain then, this Henry Lee Ching. Yes. After witnessing the aftermath of a nuclear meltdown in China caused by Sir Henry, Bond must stop him at all costs before he launches many more attacks, causing global pandemonium and sparking World War III. So mid-30s, half Chinese, half British.
Not mid-30s.
Do you think at this time they would not have cast someone white and put like prosthetic on his eyes, would they?
No.
This is not long after Remo Williams.
But would they have to with Nicolas Cage?
What? Don't you think Johnny Depp could pull that off?
I think he would insist upon it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this would
be insist.
Yeah, this would be like Sean Young, you know, barging onto the Warner's lot in her homemade Catwoman costume.
It's funny to me to hear these descriptions, because I feel like in the Bond movies that I've seen, you don't hear, hey, that half Chinese, half British businessman with microchips is waiting for you, Mr. Bond.
But it makes complete sense.
You just say, you know, like,
no, but it makes total sense, because you're going for, this is right around a few years before the Hong Kong transition, where the power is going from the British government to the Chinese government. So I'm sure they want to play both sides of that.
Also, because
a character who's torn.
Dr. No was, what,
Wiseman, half Joseph
Chinese, Wiseman. Half German, the character?
Yes, but accepted by neither.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, the robot hands were German.
Yes. Very German. German. Steel. Very German.
German steel.
So this is a tough one. You know the guy who played, he was in 21 Jump Street?
Richard Grieco.
I think he was Korean. No, but I'm listening. That guy kind of looks slightly, maybe not. I don't know.
How about Lou Diamond Phillips?
Oh, I like that. I mean, nowhere near either of these.
I know, but when you're trying to hit a mark that is unhittable.
Mm-hmm. We're casting in 1990. They had sensitivity to that. All right. Okay, Dr. Ron Beardy. Ron Beardy.
As himself?
Okay.
And introducing Dr. Ron Beardy as himself.
Ching Lee's research assistant who advises him on the computer chip Bond is selling. So
what were the best beards in cinema?
Is he wearing a beard? I mean, is Bond?
Let's assume he is.
Here's a stupid guy question for the Bond experts: if a guy's name is Beardy, does he just have a big beard? Is it that on the nose?
No,
in this franchise?
But because they don't give us anything else, let's say that's the only requirement. This guy has to be known for, or at least have had a beard in something before that you've seen.
Billy Gibbons.
Who's that?
From ZZ Top.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, they probably make a cameo.
He also plays one of the guitarists in Back to the Future.
I do have one in my head.
Okay.
He's probably too old here. Ron Silver.
No.
Yeah, I don't think
he was.
I mean, if he's
to be a lab
assistant.
Oh, sure.
To Johnny Depp.
And you're going for someone.
Or Lou Diamond Phillips.
He's a research assistant.
A research assistant.
I want to go with the guy who played Ellis in Die Hard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. What is his name?
Holt. Holt or something. Hart.
Hart Bochner. Hart Bochner.
He's got a great beard, too.
Oh, man.
Too.
Yeah, you would love
so we are going on. We're going based on beard solely here.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's important.
So, Jonathan Frakes?
Yeah.
Was this beard era Frakes? I think this was pre-beard Frakes.
Frakes' beard came in 88, season 2. Come on.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm still waiting to hit puberty myself, so I you know, I'm a little jealous.
Chris, do you have an option for this?
Research assistant.
Yeah.
This is a weird role.
Oh, boy.
I mean, I guess it could be some nerdy youngling or something. But he's a doctor, too.
Could be one of those smart doctors, like a Doogie Howser type.
Yeah. Christian Slater.
That's kind of great.
Yeah.
I think that's actually not a bad move.
Now it's taking me down the path of all the young guns. So,
well, I started this.
Baltazar Getty.
Right.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland.
Emilio
Estevez.
That's
going to be a really good idea for a podcast where you watch all of the Young Guns films and discuss them in detail.
I would do it. I love that second one. I really do.
Blaze of Glory.
Yeah.
Get into
Steel
it.
Steel Horse I Ride.
Okay, so are we going with Christian Slater or what?
Well, I don't know. Pump Up the Volume was pretty successful.
Yeah.
This is Heathers is 89, I think. He's pretty hot. I think we should get him while we can.
Mobsters. Isn't this character, this is maybe the moral compass here of this laboratory?
Yeah,
this guy has nefarious things with his microchips and this lab assistant knows the truth.
I have a feeling he's kind of like the guy in License to Kill, Truman Lodge. You know that guy?
Truman Lodge, yeah.
He's kind of more like cares more of an idealist.
I like that guy, and I also
This man is freighted by conscience.
This fits the Bond franchise move. Granted, there wouldn't have been two movies between, but it is a thing they do, which is recast
types.
Yeah, but I think you put him in that role.
The same guy.
Same guy.
Wow.
Ooh.
Dye his hair.
Mm. Ooh.
Are you listening, Anthony Stark? Okay, next up, Mi-Y.
I don't know.
A beautiful field Chinese intelligence services operative. So she must be the secondary Bond girl. I mean, is it Michelle Yeoh?
Oh.
Or Tia Carrera?
Got to be one.
Can't be both of them.
I mean, yeah, it, like, you know, we could have brought back Michelle Yeoh for Tomorrow Never Dies still. Yeah, after her...
I mean, she is a Hong Kong agent. She could have returned in the same role.
Right. When was Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
2000.
Rumble in the Bronx.
Would she have been too young for this?
No.
No?
In 91? No way. No. She's right in the pocket.
She's in the Bond zone.
Okay. Should we go with that?
Yes. Michelle Yeoh, I love it.
Any objections? Going once? Twice?
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, no!
Damn. We got it in under the wire. We have to consider
it.
We
got to talk about it. Yes.
Mark, make your case.
I don't want to.
Quen Lo. Mi-Y's immediate superior, who is section chief of Chinese intelligence service, suspects the British may be planning to renege on a promise to hand back Hong Kong.
I'm pretty sure that
that's
this,
why robots
this is
are blowing up.
The plot of Double Impact has a lot to do with the governmental transition of Hong Kong. That's from right. 90. Every time I've ever heard anything about this hypothetical third Dalton film, it sounds awfully similar to, other than the fact that it's about identical twins who were separated at birth.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
Chow Yun-Fat. It would be in his 40s.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and you'd be getting late in 30s. On the ground floor, America-wise, right?
That's right.
You're not really done any American films at that point.
Because John Woo doesn't come over for another 3 years.
Agreed, then. Okay, last one, Rodan. I always thought it was Yakuza, but here they keep saying Yakuzi. I don't know.
If you're in a triad, please email us.
A Yakuza assassin who is on Sir Henry's payroll and out to stop Bond and Connie at any cost. He is equipped with an array of high-tech weapons and gadgets that would make even Q envious. Okay, so this guy's a badass.
This is your James Bond counterpart.
Japanese badass.
He's Japanese?
Assassin. I'm assuming Yakuza. His name's Rodan.
It's not George Takei.
Sorry. I'm going Wesley Snipes. I would love to see Wesley Snipes as
but imagine like you know 91, so this is New Jack City.
Well, in that case I'm going Judd, what's his name?
Nelson.
Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson.
No, but just like imagine the career it seemed like Wesley Snipes was on the verge of having at that time. It was like this guy was going to be another De Niro or something,
right?
You know, he looked like he could do anything,
and he could maybe work for the Yakuza. He doesn't have to be Japanese.
I suppose that's right. But
that's why I'm going Brandon Lee. On this one,
yeah, I think you're right.
You know, you want a young, arrogant,
hotshot
Andy Garcia in Godfather 3.
Yes, agreed. Boy, that's good. Okay. Matt, do you have anything to throw in that ring?
Well, I was thinking, but I mean, it's hard with the age situation. I'm trying to like really place it. I'm thinking, how old is he? Hang on. Perfect. Ken Watanabe.
Oh, yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a great pick.
This This is finally making sense. That's a tough one. Brandon Lee, Ken Watanabe. What do we do?
Wesley Snipes.
Okay.
I haven't chosen one. I'm going B.D. Wong. No, I'm just kidding.
He's pretty young.
Just another dumb guy question for you. These films typically don't have stars. Top to bottom. So are you...
Right.
Are you pulling from these other film markets... thinking that that's where they would be getting their stars, or would they be pulling?
Well, I think they're in a unique situation here, where they're trying to go for people that can act and be in the American market. So they're probably going to go after stars of that genre, mm-hmm. which Michelle Yeoh was when they cast Michelle Yeoh. So I'm feeling like a Ken would be a good move.
I'd be happy with
that. And if you want your accurate King and I actor, well, that's going to be good.
What?
Instead of Jonathan Pryce.
Oh.
Oh, Miss Saigon. The engineer
in
Miss Saigon?
Yeah. Isn't he in The King and I?
Maybe.
You want Yul Brynner in this thing?
What's Yul Brynner doing here?
When did he die? Lou Diamond Phillips was in King and I.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
In the stage production, right. So we got that.
Oh, thank God.
Ken Watanabe was in The King and I.
Yes.
Really?
Because and that's what I confused.
Billy Gibbons was in The King and I.
One of my wife's friends was in the chorus on Broadway recently with Ken Watanabe, and we were going to go surprise him after the show. And so we waited by the stage door, but our friend didn't come out, but Ken Watanabe did. So we got his autograph and a picture with him, only because we were there. This is very strange.
How many people were waiting?
We didn't go to the show. We didn't see it. We just were.
How many people were waiting?
How many people were waiting?
Outside the door.
At least 100 people.
That's amazing.
Former guest of this show, Jeff Davis, was the son of Anna in the Yul Brynner Broadway production of King and I.
That's right.
When he was a kid. His last tour of it when he was dying of cancer, I think.
Yes, he told us a great Yul Brynner story, did he not?
He may have.
You'll have to go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah, he also tells one and I Was There Too where he spanked a kid. That wasn't his.
Maybe that's where I heard it.
He may have been, yeah.
That used to be allowed.
Somehow that's the one episode of I Was There Too I listened
that's
to.
That's the one. All right. Locations, United Kingdom.
Oh, wait a minute. You know, I'm sorry to interrupt here. But we're shutting down the henchman file now, right? We're fully cast. Because I feel like my one legitimate credential here that I have is that I worked for a former Bond villain. I was Ricky Jay's personal assistant for a year. So this is long after Henry Gupta.
Did you have to organize his fucking cards or something?
I did have to keep the files. I was not privy to any
tricks.
Yeah, well,
you
there's
out to get thin-skinned watermelons.
No, hey, that's he has
he's very good.
No, I was like when the show was going on, I was handling guests and stuff that. Yeah.
Was this Deadwood era?
I think this was after the first season of Deadwood. He was a little bit less active, and in fact, right after I left and moved back east, he was immediately hired to work on The Prestige, which I would have loved to have been around that, because he was their magic advisor and also had a small role. And he was also advising on The Illusionist at that time, like the other period magic.
That was weird that they did two period magic films.
It sure was, but that's such a cool,
by the way,
mini genre.
I'll repitch it again. I do it every year. You just do one of those Illusionist Prestige era magic movies. The rival magicians are Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. I'll pay you so much money to make that movie.
I swear, I feel like they'd done that, but I'm thinking...
You're thinking of Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah, which was...
Get it out of my face!
Yeah.
Anyway, it was long after Henry Gupta, but I just wanted to...
Was he a nice guy?
Unmask myself. Yes, he treated me very well.
He doesn't seem nice. He doesn't seem nice? I don't
have any horror stories, and I was not a good assistant, and he was very, very tolerant of my incompetence.
What do you mean you weren't a good assistant?
I mean, I was a little, a little disorganized, a little unreliable. I was not the cool, calm, collected...
You mixed up his dry cleaning.
...that I am today. I'm feeling a little anxious now, recalling some of the stuff that screwed up. He was more than reasonable.
Would it be like, would you embarrass him in front of, say, David Copperfield's assistant, or
never did that?
James Randi's assistant.
I went he took his show, Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants, to the Studio Theater in Washington, D.C. And I said, I'm from that area. You know, let me go with you. I'll be useful, sir. Like that kid in Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't necessarily need me there. He had, you know, people doing everything he needed. But I was going to be able to stay with my folks. So I went along. And one of my jobs there was to invite people he knew or prominent people backstage after the show when they were in the audience. So one night, Justice Breyer, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, was there with his wife. You know, so I, at, like, at intermission, I was like, oh,
no,
you know, Justice
fan.
Breyer, you know, Mr. J would be honored if you would join him after. And so, and I had started by this point to date the house manager at Studio Theater.
Nice.
I back in the green room, I'm supposed to, you know, stick my head in every few minutes to see whether they're,
sure,
you know, whether I'm supposed to usher the people out or let them stay longer, or, you know, there's a whole system of cues. And, Justice Breyer is asking Ricky how he developed this proficiency with sleight of hand magic. And he says, oh, you know, it's just practice. I was doing this forever. I was on Ed Sullivan when I was 4 years old. He's like, it's that old joke. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? And I had one of those moments where, like, I thought I said something internally, but it turned out I spoke it out loud. He said, you know, one of those things, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And I said, sleep with the house manager. And then I realized I'd said it out loud and I thought I was fired. But then I looked up and Ricky was laughing and the Supreme Court justice was laughing. Only his wife looked a little uncertain about what I said. So,
well, how do you think she got with the justice of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, clerk for, I don't know. So I did remain employed after that day.
That's a great
cash
and
checks
story.
From Henry Gupta.
That's a great story.
He invented techno-terrorism.
He did. So do you appreciate Tomorrow Never Dies, or do you look at it as though you're...
You know, I always thought I was more of a partisan for it. I got to say, you know, you guys have had a lot of influence on how I regard these films. I mean, I was a fan long before your podcast started, and I saw all the Brosnan ones as they came out, and I always liked him, but I have retroactively downgraded my opinion as a result of...
This podcast doesn't have influence. Matt Gourley has influence.
No, it does, but I got it. Like, I distinctly remember seeing Tomorrow Never Dies a second time in the theater, so
yes.
I must have appreciated it, but on my most recent revisit, it was a little rough.
Yeah, I think that's my
point.
I don't
follow that. I really don't.
Well,
I think it's the greatest movie to come out in 1997. I think Titanic robbed it.
Yeah, you didn't see Starship Troopers?
All of it.
Didn't see Face Off?
I've never seen
Starship
Troopers.
You didn't see L.A. Confidential?
Well, that was pretty good.
Confidential was pretty good.
Did it have Pierce Brosnan in it? No.
Didn't need it.
I do like that scene when Russell Crowe breaks the chair in the interrogation room then runs in.
I was vaguely aware of him, and I had never seen Guy Pearce before. That was a
terrific. Guy Pearce, by the way, history is forgotten, should have been Batman. He should have been Batman.
You don't think he's a little too sinewy for Batman?
I think the jaw on that man belongs in a cowl.
Well,
can you get him in a Bond film? I'll see what I can do.
If Batman is doing acrobatics and martial arts, he shouldn't be burly. He should be wiry.
Sinewy.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think, yes, anyway.
Yeah, but his superpower is he's rich.
He's also a straw alien. All right, locations, United Kingdom, Scotland, London, Japan, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Central China.
You listed London and the United Kingdom there.
I'm writing what they've got here.
Isthmus.
Vehicles, Aston Martin DB5, twin ejector seats.
What? The driver's side and the passenger side? Oh, it didn't go. Hang on. Oh, I fucked it up. Oh,
if you could only see the defective broken air horns iPhone app.
That was the sad trombone.
Rear bulletproof shield, mines, flares, a Lamborghini. Oh, shit. A stealth car. Heat-seeking missiles, machine guns, infrared tracking system, and a motorcycle with front-mounted missile launcher.
Oh, I love it. That probably belongs to one of the fat twins.
Isn't that that goes way back to Thunderball. Yeah, that's a...
I have to say, this movie so far does not sound great.
You don't like a stealth car?
No.
I don't think it's going to be a car
that's an idea they want to hold
invisible.
On to.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a stealth car.
Still, they had a stealth boat in Tomorrow Never Dies. Look where that got it. Gadgets. A high-tech helmet with a heads-up display.
Yeah, because you always think of James Bond in a helmet.
I wanted it to be one of those old leather helmets with no face mask or anything.
Heads-up display that has several views, heat sensing, night vision, and more.
So Terminator.
Oh, get this. Nan, a female robot assassin. This movie was
Hang on. Is she a female robot that is an assassin, or is she a female that kills robots?
Yeah.
No, I think she's a robot because they talk about
an assassin
about
of robots like Sarah in this.
Yeah. Mm.
And how humanoid do you think they'd make the robot? If they're going to...
I mean, if this is James Bond and they've got like literally an android in this movie, that's it. Mm. That's too much.
Yeah. And it's this, you know, this is 1991, so robots still looked like Johnny Five.
I'll bet you they are. Like,
or not.
They're probably pulling on... I know Terminator 2 hadn't come out, but I wonder if they are kind of like...
Doing a T-1000.
Dot Matrix from Spaceballs.
Or Vicky from Small Wonder.
Well, she's a voice input child identikit.
Law enforcement division.
Boy. All right. Let's get on to this synopsis.
I don't know that we need to now that we've discovered there's a female robot assassin.
You're listening to Small Wondering.
All right, you guys talk, and I'll let you know if there's anything important that has to come out here.
I think there's so much wrong with this movie, and I can see why it was in development hell. However,
he dodged a bullet.
I think they were wise to get out of the way of Double Impact.
Do you think that that had any actual bearing on their plans? Mm.
I mean, I think Double Impact actually, like, they shot a bunch in Hong Kong.
Well, it probably was on their radar because JCVD at the time, just a terrific star.
Like, you know, I don't think he ever, like, even Seagal, like, had a brief moment as an A-lister, and I don't think Van Damme ever quite got there. Well, even though his movies came out theatrically longer than Seagal's did.
Here's a not a dumb Bond man question for you again. This seems highly derivative of everything else going on in film.
That is a signature trait of Bond.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when they do veer, like go in, do they ever steer away from it? Or do they always kind of lean into the tropes of the day?
Well, they
because
don't.
If they do those movies, are those movies good? Or are those movies the bad ones when they're leaning into what's already going on as opposed
question.
To innovating?
Yeah. I mean, my treatment for the movie where Bond and M wake up and they realize they've switched bodies and hijinks ensue was not well received. I heard it was.
I would watch
Barbara
that
Broccoli
with Judy Dench and Daniel Craig. I would watch that.
I want to watch it now.
When did that? I think.
Because this literally feels like, there's robots in this other movie. We better put them in our movie.
It is.
And that's 100% what they do in the Bond.
Except in the beginning, they created this, really created the action blockbuster genre with Dr. No, Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice. And then I think Honor Majesty's Secret Service was doing its own thing, but by the time you get to Die Another Day, it starts to feel like an American gritty 70s action movie, camp action movie. And then especially Live and Let Die, you're doing a blaxploitation film. And then from that point on, they're pretty much stealing almost every movie.
Right.
And then if they're not stealing from another movie, they're stealing from themselves, like View to a Kill or Spy Who Loved Me.
Well, I think part of the problem is they so often use the same writers over and over again that it just sort of ended up becoming a sitcom room where they're like, oh fuck, what are we going to put him in this time?
Yeah, it's a miracle in hindsight that Casino Royale worked as amazingly well as it did, considering you've got the, you know, the same old writers again. You've got Martin Campbell back for a second time.
And they're stealing heavily from Bourne in terms of style, I think.
I mean, I feel like that's a bit...
I do agree with your statement that it is a bit overstated.
But don't you think they're stealing from its success is what I mean? Like they're saying,
I mean,
like,
I see,
to do this
I see more of the influence in Quantum of Solace than in Casino Royale.
Yeah, I don't mean in direction because I think that's where Casino Royale, I even think, goes above the Bourne movies.
I think so too. And it's an interesting question to me, like why the stunt stuff, the hand-to-hand stuff is not as sharp even in like Skyfall, as it is in Casino Royale. I mean, I feel like it's the Mission Impossible movies are kind of the leader on that at the moment. I feel like they're
the newer ones,
the best.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like great Roger Moore movies.
And I don't think they've been any after three.
Really?
That's when they get good.
Yeah, Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation are fantastic.
I think those
really
are the two best. Really, yeah.
Hold I've been on. Hearing that. Oh. We come in and be like, oh, you guys are talking about this.
It's,
I'm trying to get back up.
It's Margo, everyone.
Margo, what are your thoughts on James Bond?
This is Margo, the fat guy's gun barrel entrance. 4 hours into the episode.
What do you think about James Bond? This is par.
How do you think Blofeld got that cat to sit so still?
It didn't. Have you seen that gif of it freaking out? There is one shot in the movie where the cat is just absolutely going crazy.
I think that what I'm realizing is that we should be grateful we never got this movie.
Sounds like it.
Well, because if you think about the downward trend that License to Kill, Living Dead and License to Kill were on box office wise. Mm-hmm. And if this movie had come out and it had done poorly, let's say they got it in under the wire and then the legal stuff was pushed a little bit with the sale of MGM, I feel like it could have meant the end of the franchise.
Oof. Well, Dalton predicted that, didn't he? This is long before he officially quit. I thought he said that shortly after License to Kill that he thought it was coming to an end, and he took pains to specify that he didn't mean his tenure. He meant the entire series.
And I think it could have. I mean, had you gotten a James Bond movie with stealth car and robot assassins.
But you kind of do in Die Another Day. There's an invisible car and
that
a robot.
A pile of garbage.
I know.
Where's the robot?
Well, there's that like programmable laser thing, you know?
Yeah, but it's basically
like an
assembly line robot, right?
But what I'm saying is, like, if Die Another Day didn't kill the franchise, what would?
It nearly did, Die Another Day.
It did pretty well, I think.
No, it did real well.
Yeah, but it killed James Bond, as far as I'm concerned. Pierce Brosnan's no longer in it. Why am I even watching it anymore?
So, but would they have had the means to reboot
it? It was Vin Diesel in XXX who declared his intention to kill James Bond.
Good luck, buddy.
I haven't seen that movie.
I didn't see the new XXX, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, sorry about that, buddy.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's good that this didn't come out.
Oh, I think it's definitely good that this didn't come out. I would have loved to have seen another Dalton done well.
Yeah.
So let's end on that. What would be a good... First of all, who would have directed this? And then
I like Mark's questions, and he had one.
Thanks, Matt.
Look at this guy.
What in this giant pile of just stuff thrown at the wall to see what sticks would have been the hang-up that an executive at the studio would have been like, yeah, that's... We're not doing this because there's a motorcycle with missiles on it.
Yeah,
that's.
I think probably the suggestion that there are microchips and everything would have been too much.
But I don't think I think this would have been fine. They would have gone like they would have just lit.
Really?
Yeah, because this is no crazier than some of the other shit they've done.
All right,
but I don't think it would have been good.
I think once you're entering the world of robots. Like you're entering a reality that is so skewed.
This is like Moonraker.
And also, like, contextually, historically at the time, the idea that some genius could have built these robots that do all these things was more plausible, right? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Because it delves into science fiction. It is possible,
Matt.
In this
I take
world.
Back what I said about Mark's questions.
I tried to tell you.
I have like some weird genius builds these assassin robots.
Well, I guess my
but robots,
question is,
yeah.
What is the aesthetic of them? I need to know if they're utilitarian looking or if they're fucking looking exactly like human beings.
They look like shit. I'm sure they look like shit.
But
it's 1991.
I know, but
they look like shit.
What I mean, I guess, is like, are they gonna walk around like a Terminator?
Here's one
where you can't.
Yeah,
Gadget Nan, a
female
robot assassin.
They're gonna look like those
70s
Battlestar Galactica Cylons. They're gonna be all clunky.
That a female robot assassin implies that there would be a female playing that
role. A female form.
Yeah.
You know, robot so you're already having a gender situation.
Yeah.
Unless it's like Johnny Five with boobs. My brain can't get
Wait
there.
Wait a minute.
All right.
I know who plays Nan.
Who?
Whoopi Goldberg.
That would be so weird to have a Bond movie with robot assassins.
Joanna Cassidy.
You know,
she was on a Kick Murder Squad.
Yeah.
What better credential is there?
The Bond movies exist in a world that I always think of as 8 months in the future. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whenever you're watching a Bond movie, you're like, oh, this is right. 8 months from now.
Well, they start shooting it, it's coming out in 8 months because they don't give themselves a lot of time.
So, you know, you're the tech of it all is usually a pretty easy buy where usually... I mean, I think the only point where we all just were like, oh, God, was the invisible car in Die Another Day. Which they have, I mean, there is something to the way the technology is described. It will project images on the other side of that it sees on the other side of the car. But it just, that was the step too far for the franchise as far as the tech was concerned for me. So, it's hard for me to imagine a James Bond movie that is five movies before that, a decade before that, that has robot assassins. Now, I get that in Moonraker, they go to space and they have lasers, but it's based on a space shuttle. Well, okay, I'll sort of buy that. And these laser weapons are ridiculous, but somehow viable in my head.
Yeah, and the space shuttle had not flown when Moonraker came. I mean, it had been flown in the atmosphere, but it hadn't gone into space, so people knew what it looked like. But
looked like the Enterprise. That's what it was.
So who would direct this film?
I have two names.
Okay.
And I don't think Cubby would go for either of them, because I don't think Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, no matter what they say now, like, I don't think we're ever going to get a Chris Nolan or a Tarantino and stuff, because I think they want somebody pliant, ultimately, right? They're never going to give
so
anybody final
cut. So it's the Kathleen Kennedy of it all.
Yeah. And I, you know, I would love to hear about how Sam Mendes ended up in this, because that must have been a hell of a negotiation.
I think they might get Nolan at some point,
really?
Because he has enough.
Yeah, but cred, but you
and would
but
remain
he's
true to it.
But he's going to have final cut on the movie if he does it, right? And I can't imagine that's part of the deal, that you're Roger Spottiswoode's and
no, you know, Lee Tamahori did
your
not
John
have
Glenn's
final cut.
Get. But in 1991, you know, we're 26 years in the past, and we've yet now in 2017, 8 months and some years in the future, have not had a woman direct a Bond film yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you get Catherine Bigelow, coming off of Blue Steel, coming off of Near Dark. I would mourn the loss of Point Break, because I really love Point Break.
Yeah, me too.
But this would have been something. This would have been something.
That would have been a fast... This movie with her direction.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine what that would be.
See,
like,
my other one is John McTiernan, because he's right in his glory at this point. He's in between two projects with Sean Connery.
Help us get McTiernan out of prison. That's our goal.
That's right.
On this podcast.
No, that's the only reason I'm here, is to appeal.
Is he still in prison?
He's still in prison.
Is he?
Yes.
I thought he got. Oh, okay.
I thought he was out too.
Right.
He would have been great in this era for a Bond movie.
It really seemed in 1991 like he was the Wesley Snipes of directors. There was nothing he could not do.
Yeah.
His career would be on the ascent forever.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are both great choices. The name that popped in my head today, this afternoon, when I was reading this stuff at lunch, was Tony Scott.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he would have been
the person they
coming,
would go
coming
with.
Off of Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
He is not one of my favorites.
It's sort of interesting that he got real experimental late in his career.
Yeah.
And like, a lot of those movies don't work, but they're ambitious and strange, which most people who get to that level commercially don't
right.
become as as wacky.
Bond movies need to toe a careful line between the fantastic and the real. And I feel like Tony Scott handles the fantastic well, but his real always is melodrama. And I think Bond is at its weakest when it plays with melodrama.
Yes, but it is a consistent weakness. Do you know what I mean?
It's very consistent. His movies are, you can see him a mile away.
No, I mean in the Bond franchise. The way that they handle melodrama when they handle it. I never think it's great until we get... You know, there's exceptions for each Bond, but I think for the most part when they're doing it, it's I just like go, oh boy.
But I don't think Bond tends toward melodrama that often, and I think maybe that's my problem with the Brosnan era, is that's when I feel like it has its heaviest occurrence.
Of handsomeness.
That's true, but also melodrama.
Sure.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that John McTiernan made the 99 Thomas Crown Affair, which you mentioned earlier, but that movie is great. And it's got your Rene Russo in it. It's got something for everybody.
And I think he brings something out of Brosnan that's lacking in the Bond movies. Yeah.
He's great in The Tailor of Panama soon after that, too.
That's on my list to watch. I'm going through all the Le Carre movies.
My desire for Tony Scott. It's gone.
Okay.
I was just convinced by this resume that was just dropped in front of me.
Pretty great.
And that's where it ends for it. Like, I don't think he ever had... I mean, I don't remember if that movie was a hit or not, but like, I think that's the end of the era of grade A McTiernan.
Yeah.
99.
Let's wrap it up with what you would like to have seen in a third Dalton movie. Where would it go? And what would be the basic idea? Would have been around, let's say it's 1991 to 93. So...
Okay, it starts with him bringing a new leg to Felix. I want to pick up close to where we left off.
A can of bat shark repellent signed by Adam West.
So he brings a new leg to Felix. And while he's there, he gets a talking to from the FBI agent with the Jerry curls.
Not Agent Johnson, Agent Johnson.
Agent Johnson.
Right.
And he's like, listen, I'm sorry I was so hard on you. But you really did it. You really helped us out a lot. We got another big guy for you to take down. And he hands him a dossier from the FBI. So then all of a sudden, James Bond is working for us. And then it's your full-blown American James Bond movie with Timothy Dalton in New York.
Oh, boy. What's going on in the world?
Financial crisis, you know?
Well, the wall comes down at the end of 91.
There we go.
Right? So
there we go, and it's still got some remnants of the Cold War. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to make a probably
Did you guys see Atomic Blonde this year?
No. Because
that was set in Berlin in 89, and they really did not do enough with that. Sorry.
They should have told us that.
I would like that. I would like that. There's something
I would have been more inclined to see it if I was told it was set in 1989.
What if there's something where like the wall's coming down, but
a new wall is coming up.
There's something where
Death Star 2 is being built in the middle of
something underground happening that if Bond doesn't fix it, like all the relation, like the Cold War could start up all over again or something like that. I don't know.
What if he has to, he's forced to escort David Hasselhoff to the wall?
Now I need you to be serious here.
Well, I was in my American James Bond pitch.
We would never be so lucky to get David Hasselhoff in a Bond film.
I just don't know what the socio-political, I mean, it always has to be a nuke, right? Mm,
yeah.
It always has to be a news. Maybe still, someone's threatening.
Was this still Thatcher's England in 91, 90?
Maybe. Look.
This is impossible
to
verify.
Let me throw out my idea.
I want to hear Mark's idea.
I just want the guy in snow. I want snow fights.
Dalton in snow.
I want shooting and snow. So, and we get him to Canada.
1990 was her last year as...
Okay.
Prime Minister.
Get him to Canada and he brings his
there's
cello
a scene
case
of him playing hockey for some reason.
Oh, that sounds very Wayne's World.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
I mean, Well, if Thatcher, if Thatcher's reign, quote unquote, for lack of a better term, ends in 1990, don't you have some political intrigue to deal with?
Mm.
The aftermath of her.
Yes, it's a palace melodrama about Thatcher's ambitious underlings vying to succeed.
I don't know.
I like the Hong Kong.
You
want to
be the PM?
It,
you got to kill the PM.
When's the last time that the James Bond franchise had gone to the Far East? Was it Man with a Golden Gun?
Like prior to this?
Yeah, as a substantive part of the movie.
Yes.
He's in India.
Yeah.
We're going Far East.
Okay.
I guess that's it, huh? So it had been a while.
I mean, I think it's a great... I like the story if we don't have robot assassins.
Mm.
If we do have someone sabotaging this new Minister of Defense,
right,
and we do have some sort of corrupt microchip guy.
But now aren't we just watching The Kingsman?
Oh boy.
Honestly, isn't that the plot of The Kingsman? Everyone has a mobile phone and then the chip in the phone
basically
switched on and now the phones are all weaponized.
We're all rage beasts.
Yeah. John Major was the prime minister.
Good name.
He was the guy without lips.
Yeah. They had the technology. They could be built.
As they called
it.
There
it is. Well, I think that's our Dalton movie.
The guy without lips.
John Major
the man
is,
without lips.
It, you know, it's a Manchurian candidate thing where the prime minister of England is actually a robot.
Yeah.
Assassin.
Yeah.
No. He's a robot assassin.
007, you must find the prime minister's lips. They're located somewhere.
Oh boy, but see, now we're going to spoil a big part of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation for Matt Myra over here.
Oh boy.
Because
here it goes.
It reaches the highest levels of the British government, Matt. That's okay. All I'll tell you.
All right.
Well,
do they find the lips? In your version. Where are they?
Canada.
Oh.
And Australia. One lip's in Canada, one's in Australia.
It's just the upper lip.
It's in the freezing cold and it's a stiff upper
penny.
Lip.
Get me on a plane to Australia.
Do you mean Australia?
Oh boy.
Well, Chris, Mark, you guys really brought it.
Thanks, Matt.
Chris, you came prepared with copious notes and information. Mark, you came prepared with an outsider's joie de vivre.
What was on the notes?
Let's see.
Oh, he probably got the... Well, he did have great ideas. For
well, I do have your home address written down, so I'm not going to read that out. I can give out the address of the Comfort Inn at Eagle Rock.
Well, we all know Matt's address is 007 Gorley Way.
That's right.
It's 555-5555 Universal Export Way.
Well, if you haven't yet gotten a Kananga Balloon or Pigeon Double Take t-shirt at podswag.com/bond, go there now because they're going fast.
You're almost out of luck. Kananga Balloon sold out, you said.
I think smalls are left.
Great. Can I have two?
That's amazing.
It's 10:52.
Great.
Yeah.
I think we did a good job, everybody.
So that means intermission?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interval?
Anything else, Matt? Do you need to cover anything?
No, I think we did a great job. We'll be back.
Chris, where can people find you? Tell us what you're up to.
So I archive all my movie reviews and other things at for NPR and all the other places I'm writing for at chrisklimek.com. I am on Twitter at CTKLIMEK.
Mark?
I'm at Mark McConville on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to find me on Facebook, go ahead. I probably won't look at it.
Well, thank you guys very much.
Oh, this was a big thrill. Thank you for letting me do it.
Love you.
James Bonding will return.
Return.
Skyfall.
Oh, that's right. Skyfall's next. Fire up your Skyfall engines, everyone. Bye. James Bonding Podcast. The holidays are coming up fast, and if you are having trouble deciding what to get your loved ones, give the gift of a Pod Swag gift card.
It's the perfect thing for any of the podcast lovers in your life.
You don't have to worry about getting their size right or accidentally getting them something they already have.
Instead, let them choose.
And now, For the entire month of November, get 20% off your gift card purchase when you go to podswag.com and use the code GIFTCARD20 at checkout.
That's podswag.com, offer code GIFTCARD20 for 20% off your purchase of a gift card. It's a fun way to save 20% off sweet t-shirts like Kananga Balloon.
That's right. Or, you know what, I'll shill for the other side. Pigeon Double Take.
We're all in this together, kids. Go to podswag.com, use the gift card code, GIFTCARD20, 20% off. Gotta go.
We're all in this together, kids, but only for James Bond. Don't buy anything else.
I mean, you don't really need another Comedy Bang Bang shirt.
You could use an I Was There Too mug.
Or a James Bonding poster.
Well, that's right. They're coming soon, if not already, depending on when you listen to this, future boy.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.